It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
But there's a lot of reasons to be afeard, but, you know, we're not, because we just know what's coming. And to take point for us, go out there and kind of, you know, find out just how bad it is, we have Liberty on Tour, the Bus Marv, the RV that's going around the country, and they're giving it what for. And I tell you, you know, Pete and Adam are on the phone with us. They're going to be coming to Phoenix here. Oh, is it next week? Right? Yeah. Cool. Next week they're going to be here, and we're going to have us a good old time. Well, what I want to do is, you know, tell us about your trip, what you've been doing, and give us some of the highlights, man. We've been following you, but dang, I mean, you know, can you go anywhere without getting hassled by the man?
Well, we spent last week in San Diego, and we didn't have any run-ins with the folks with badges there, which was pretty nice.
Well, you know, what we did, I tell you, in preparation for you guys coming to Phoenix, we talked to a representative from the Phoenix Police Department, and we said, look, you know, these guys, go ahead and check out their site. You'll see that we support these guys, and they had motorhome diaries during the Lovevolution. They were doing that, and they said, hey, that worked out really good. We'll go do it again, because then you went around and you kind of introduced everybody to all the people that were activists around the country and kind of bring the family together, and then we're going to do Liberty on Tour. We're going to do it again, have some fun. Well, every city you go to, I guess, you know, sans San Diego, you've had all kinds of confrontations, and all you're doing is just videotaping. The bad guys, they don't like that none too much. But here in Arizona, I said, Phoenix Police, I go, can we just give these guys a nice welcoming committee? Can we just respect their rights and not, you know, make you guys infamous again? And absolutely, we're going to take care of y'all. Well, I go, after you have a good show in here in Phoenix, we'll send you off to Scottsdale, Mesa, and we'll make sure you get beat up over there, okay? But in Phoenix, you'll be okay, you know, hopefully.
Yeah, it sounds like a good plan. I appreciate the shout-out to the PD, and hopefully they'll leave us alone. But unfortunately, you know, Liberty on Tour is about activists and people that are on the ground, you know, trying to scale back this oppressive, oversized government. And when people start to talk against the man shows up. And when they show up with force, because that's what everything in the government's backed on. It's backed by a gun. It's backed by force. And ultimately, it's a threat on yours and my life.
You know, that's one thing that in your logo for Liberty on Tour, MARV, which stands for what? MARV is the name of your RV. What does MARV stand for?
MARV is the Mobile Authority Resistance Vehicle.
Oh, okay, there we go. Now, on the front, on your logo, it has a V where one half is white, one black, two hands shaking at the top of the V. And what does it stand for? Explain that to us.
Well, yeah, that's just a symbol for voluntarism. Both Adam and I self-describe as voluntarists. We, you know, we advocate that every interaction, every transaction be consensual and no force be involved. You know, we believe that individuals be free to act so long as they don't initiate force. And it's actually gold and black because of our belief in, like, property rights, and that's where the gold stems from. The black is from no masters, anarchy, essentially. But it's essentially we just want a peaceful, prosperous society, and, you know, we think the best way to go about that and the most moral way to go about that is through voluntary interactions.
You know, this is one thing that it's really starting to, you hear it a lot. Yesterday, I had Stefan Kinsella on. We were talking about intellectual property. Is there such a thing? And that was an interesting conversation. And he used the word anarchist a lot. I mean, you know, and he, it didn't see, it rolled right off his tongue. He doesn't see that as a bad word. And it's kind of morphed into agorism, which is kind of just a free market, and also this voluntarist definition. So when you say anarchist, it seems like there was a concentrated effort by the man to go, you know what anarchists are? Anarchists are dreadlock, drum beating, standing out, causing, throwing bricks and window kind of bad guys. And that's not really it at all. Why don't you go ahead and define it for us?
Well, exactly. I mean, anarchy is simply the word means simply no masters and no rulers. And therefore, you know, it's self-government, you know, on a real individual level. And after, you know, ideally it's not backed by force, which the government is. You know, anarchy was hijacked by people, whether it's government or not, to mean chaos and all these wrongdoings, but voluntarist is something that is easily explained to people. When we meet on the road, I just like to say, I believe that you can spend your money better than a group of people known as the government, and that voluntary interactions that aren't backed by force are better than the government system we have today.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Ernie. I mean, government does have an incentive to discredit and smear the folks that, you know, are essentially its most outspoken opponents, which are people who say don't grant these people authority just because they have a badge or a fancy title. They have no right to what you earn or to control what you put in your body or your property. And, I mean, these ideas, a lot of folks credit Gustave de Molinari, who was one of the first folks who came up with, you know, even privatizing military. So, you know, every good or service should be privatized. It could be better provided by voluntary interactions. People could be better held accountable when they're not granted a monopoly.
And well, let's go ahead.
Isn't it funny how the government and people say that, oh, there's these bottle-throwing, window-smashing anarchists, but yet they fail to mention that even the ones that might be actual anarchists and not government provocateurs are still super small in scale to the size and amount of politicians you have out there that are stealing, murdering, and oppressing people on a daily basis.
You know, that's one thing I'm accused of a lot of times. They'll go like this. So it goes just like this. We'll talk about various different issues and how government's abusing the rights of individuals, and the whole purpose of government as defined in the Declaration of Independence was to protect individual rights. I mean, that was the whole purpose of having a government, not to, you know, provide for the king. I mean, I remember that one scene in Braveheart where he goes, you think, and he's talking to the nobles, and he says, you think that the people are there to provide you with possessions. And I'm of the mind that, you know, the state's possessions there to provide the people with freedom. And I'm going to go out there and get it for them. So it's just another way of looking at it. And that's what they don't want you to see. So when I'm accused, they go, Ernie, you're an anarchist, as if that's a bad thing. And I go, compared to what? What we got now? I mean, is that my choice? Seriously? I mean, I get to choose no government that's doing all this stuff that they're doing, as opposed to what they're doing. Well, I choose doing away with them. How much worse could it be? It's only through this collectivized monopoly on the force that they're able to violate everything that we are supposed to hold dear. And I'm so glad that your generation is now, I mean, you guys are in your, you know, 20s, early 30s and so on. I remember when I first started this back in 88, I was you. And I always remember thinking, you know, if we had the capacity to share what we knew, if we had the capacity to communicate instantaneously, if we had the capacity to share these ideas, to do video, to have our own printing presses, to make our own t-shirts, to not have to depend on the lamestream media, the media that's so last century, we would be able to educate an entire generation on the way things are supposed to be, what we were promised. And when you got the promise of government that, you know, they just keep promising more and more and more and more and more and more, and the reality is so far removed from that, you get a gap to the point that it's so large that's when you have a revolution. It's like chemistry. I mean, it's math. When you get to that point, all of a sudden there's no legitimacy. And just in the last few years, an entire generation has gone, you know what? I don't care how many times MTV says rock the vote. I'm not buying it. And this is what I feel is coming and what you represent. Tell me from your perspective, Do you see it as a generational thing, or are there a lot of people that are just wanting to live in a voluntary society that transcend a lot of age brackets and demographics and so on? Or is it primarily the young?
I think it's the latter. I think it transcends every generation, but I think younger folks do tend to be a little bit more open-minded just because they haven't been indoctrinated for so long through, like, the mainstream media and through politicians and bureaucrats and government schools, and also because of, you know, tools like the Internet that exist so we can learn from each other and just take this to the next level. And you mentioned, like, a revolution, but we look at it as an evolution instead of these different revolutions that have happened where folks have vested their trust in different forms of government, democracy, monarchy, religious states. They're all sitting around a hub of authority. Instead, we say evolve and live your life and govern yourself.
Humanity marches on, and it's driving around the country in Marv. LibertyOnTour.com. We'll talk about it more with Pete and Adam when we come back on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
There's a man going round taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
Oh, and Pete and Adam from Liberty on Tour, they know that for a fact. The man's always coming around, and a golden ladder's reaching down for y'all. Now, let's go ahead and take a look at, you know, where you've been. It started off, you've been New York. That was August 4th to 10th in Philadelphia, then St. Louis, Denver, Salt Lake City, San Diego. You're on your way to Vegas now, or in Vegas. Then you'll be coming here to Phoenix, Austin, Texas, New Orleans, Birmingham, Atlanta, Miami. Now, of the cities that you've gone to already, New York, Philadelphia, St. Louis, Denver, Salt Lake City, and San Diego, was there one that really stuck out in your memory as being more oppressive than the others?
Well, I mean, I guess since our arrest in Denver, that was sticking in my mind, where we were arrested for simply asking, am I legally required to give you my ID? And a whole situation which got blown out of proportion due to some event staff at a Denver Broncos game. So that was pretty oppressive. I mean, there's been the two Fiji outreaches we did in New York City and in Philadelphia, where the man showed up and in New York arrested a 78-year-old man, Julian Heichlin, and who's just handing out educational material to people who voluntarily accept it. So those two places were pretty oppressive as well. New York has always been bad for my visits, and so those three come to mind off the top of my head.
Well, go ahead and explain for the audience Fiji. You know, now I'm sure a lot of them may know it, but go ahead and tell us what it means, what activities are being done, and what justification they use to take all your goodies.
Sure. Fiji is the Fully Informed Jury Association, and, you know, they simply tell people that, hey, the judge is going to instruct you, a jury, of the two rules that they state in the courtroom, that you have to find the defendant guilty or not guilty. And when actually there's a third, the jury is also allowed to judge the law, and if they find the law is null and void at this point, we can use drug prohibition for an example. If I was on video smoking marijuana, clearly caught, but the jury said, hey, yes, he's guilty, but we think this law needs to be nullified and that it's no longer relevant for today's society, immediately I'd be found innocent, and it would really change the drug prohibition, since we're using that example, set. So it's the quickest way people can change laws without having lobbyists or trying to vote all the right people in the Congress or political power and things like that. So a lot of folks stand outside of courtrooms across the country handing these things out to potential jurors.
You know, this has been used in the past. I mean, for a lot of things throughout history. You know, William Penn was known best for this. But there are fugitive slave laws, alcohol prohibition, You know, a lot of things I would think have them scared because it's been used in the past where people just went, no, he may be guilty of this law, but I think the law sucks. So I just say not guilty. Well, they don't. That's why they have, you know, voir dire. Voir dire is a process by which the prosecutors and the defense attorneys ask the potential jurors a bunch of questions. And my friend Vince Aprenowitz writes, he goes, you know, voir dire is just French for jury stacking. And I've been on juries before or in the pool, and I've never been sat because they always ask a particular question. I know how to answer. I could wind up on them if I wanted to, but I always make a big deal out of it, and I call in. I have a guest host for my show, and I'll call in from down there and tell them what's going on and everything. And one of the things that they asked that really surprised me, they go, what kind of bumper stickers do you have on your car? And I go, really? Well, that, you know, get you disqualified right there. So I'm really seeing that they are afraid. Now, here in Arizona, they have acknowledged, the state Supreme Court, and it's a well-known fact to anybody that's paying attention, that yes, Arizona jurors do have the ability, the right, the power to nullify bad laws. Yes, absolutely, they do. But we have no obligation to tell them. And if the attorneys go around saying it, oh, we got a bar association take care of that. So I'm like, wow, this is a key issue. This is something that's interesting. Now, Julian, we had him on. Here's a gentleman. I knew of him years ago from my mother-in-law that lives in State College. He was a professor at Penn State University. And he would go out and smoke marijuana and say, arrest me. And he really wanted to challenge this. You know, he felt was unjust laws. And the one thing he spends a lot of his time on now is going out and passing fully informed jury information in front of federal court buildings. Well, they don't like that. And whenever he won't comply with, you know, show your ID or whatever, he just says, nope. And then he goes, you're under arrest. And he just lays down and they got to carry him off. Well, to get him to respond, they want you to say something. You got to speak. They're going to take you to Bellevue. You're a crazy person because you're not complying with authority. And they'll take their fist and put it in his sternum and just put all their weight on and grind it, trying to get him to, they're torturing him to get him to speak. Well, he refuses. He takes it all, gets the bruises and everything. Eventually, he'll get released. But what he's demonstrating is just how bad the government really is. And I think that right there is to have a 78-year-old man helping to educate the young generation through his civil disobedience, I think is, what else could you do for and his wife is in support too. What else could you do that would be of more value as a college professor to say, look, man, I'm gonna learnify you and let me show you how I do it. And he does. And then the people that are taking video of him doing this, they're arrested. So I'm going, I can't imagine that there's not going to be a distrust or an aversion to the federal government or any government that would act this way. So I'm glad that you guys are out there promoting this voluntarist society, but explain to me, can that exist in the society we have now? Are you actively advocating changing the politics now, or get new politicians or new guys behind the levers of power, or pass the ring of power to different people? Or are you just for creating a society inside the society? I mean, how are you advocating that this work?
That's a great question. I mean, there's a quote that Carl Wattner, who's been putting out a pamphlet called The Voluntarist, since 1982 has, and it says, if you take care of the means, meaning if you individually decide to live free and be free and not fund this violent institution and, you know, be responsible for your actions, if you take care of the means, the ends will take care of themselves. So essentially what we do is advocate to go around the political system, that's a system based on violence, bring about a freer society that way, one mind at a time. And one place that we are big advocates of is New Hampshire with the Free State Project. There's a lot of liberty-oriented doers that have moved there that are supporting each other. It's a great community. And, you know, it's tough. I mean, the state, as you pointed out, it doesn't look kindly upon folks that question its authority. But when you're up there, there's a great group behind you, and I think that's a real fertile ground for these for creating an environment of liberty. And their tagline is liberty in our lifetime, so that's what we're hoping to make happen.
Well, you just do it. You don't wait on the bad guys to do it for you, because that's not going to happen. But, you know, it reminds me, when I was young, there was a good friend of mine. He's a PhD student in Indiana right now, and he's a philosophy guy. He was editor of the Mensa newsletter and everything, smart guy, Kent Van Cleve. And I remember he had this one email, and I never forgot it. And he said, you know, libertarianism, the advocacy of freedom, is the means. You know, the goals we leave to the individuals. And they always go, well, what's your goal? Well, I don't have a goal. That's your goal. You're allowed your goal. That's the whole point of freedom is you get to have your own goal. I don't care. It's the means. It's the peaceful means by which we would allow you to be free and left alone. The goal we leave to the individual. That was the whole point and the promise of this government that we have here in America.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Independence, declare an individual. We got Pete Iyer and Adam Mueller from LibertyOnTour.com coming to Phoenix. That's right. You know, we're all getting riled up for their visit here. And we're going to, you know what I promised them? I said, you know what? Yeah, we'll have some woohoo day and we'll try and get you in a little bit of trouble and get you some good video. And then we're going to chill. We're going to go to the lake. We're going to partay. We're going to get to relax because they know that Phoenix has got it going on, and we just want to make sure you guys get a break, man, because I know you've been out there. You know, can you stay out of jail? You know, tell me about, you know, the cities that you're going to that you have left on your calendar. We have, after Phoenix, you got Texas. You go to Austin, New Orleans, Birmingham, Atlanta, Miami. Miami. Now, that sounds like, you know, starting to get cooler weather. You need to head south. And tell me what's got your attention in Miami.
We're really looking forward to going to Miami. Carlos Miller, who also is a pretty vocal voice for the right to hold accountable to folks with badges, is down there. And there's also another copblock.org contributor, another website, another project that Adam and I are active with, who's down there that we're going to meet for the first time. And it just seems like a great opportunity, I think, a great place to end Liberty on Tour. Some good potential for stories and outreach and whatnot.
Well, you know, that's one thing that when I contacted the Phoenix Police Department, I just said, look, you know, go ahead, look at Liberty on Tour. You'll see, you know, we're supportive of them and so on, but you need to go check Cop Block too. And you'll just see, man, look, they got skills. You know, you're not going to come out looking none too good on this. You guys could be in butt heads. Now, they have what they call the Confrontation Prevention Squad. Now they call it community service or whatever, but we knew them in their original original title back in the day. And the same guys, we've been dealing with these guys over 15 years. And I'm like, you know, it's just, it's not in your best interest to allow these young officers that are encouraged. I mean, from the academy, is that, you know, you can always think of some reason to get somebody. In fact, my Freedom Summit partner, oh yeah, Freedom Summit, freedomsummit.com. We're starting a promotion heavy this week on it, and we'll be putting, you'll see it all over the internet, ads and so on. You guys go check that out. freedomsummit.com. It's a going on first weekend in December. And Mark was speaking at the Breakfast Club here a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, I can tell who the good and the bad cops are. I can just ask him a simple question. And he goes, okay, so I go up to him and I say, all right, you're standing on the corner and some young little punk comes up to you. He's a 18-year-old college student, you know, goes in your face and go, I hate cops and F you and blah, 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 blah. What do you do? Well, some of them are like, yeah, whatever, and you know, and you just, you know, leave them alone, walk away. It's, you know, freedom of speech kind of thing. Good cop. Then the other guy is going, yeah, I think he stepped on my foot. You know, it's assault on a police officer, and you're going downtown kind of thing. And this is the kind of mentality that we're looking for now. And it's not that you're doing, you're always polite. You're always just asking questions. But, man, you got a video camera. And do you think it's the video camera that does it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we just interact with such a high number of people with badges that every now and then we'll come across somebody who doesn't like the fact that we ask them pointed questions and you know, ask them to think about how their salary is paid for or if they have extra rights and things like that.
Yeah, I think the camera actually keeps us from being assaulted more. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's been twice now we've had our camera gear stolen from us. Where it has nothing to do with the incident, but they keep it because they recorded the incident. And so, yeah, the camera keeps us from, I think, getting further abuse. But like in Denver, all we said to these men was, they said, they walk up, they don't even, like, introduce themselves or say why they're here. They just say, give me your ID. And both of our responses when interacting with officers is ask them questions. And our question is, am I legally required to do so? And then they're like, oh, so you're refusing. No, I'm not refusing. I'm asking you why I need to give it to you, and you as an officer need to state to me why. And tell me the statute other than, well, because I said so. And so, I mean, in those incidents, I don't think the camera does any good because we still always end up getting arrested, but yet it does keep us from getting further abuse.
And how many, is there a camera on the camera, the guy videotaping the event? I mean, how many cameras do you guys got?
Well, we don't have enough, that's for sure. But, I mean, we've learned some things from that. And we also now we have smartphones and we have Quick, which is a free application that folks can download if they have the correct smartphones. But essentially you can stream live to the Internet. So even if these guys with badges keep your camera or even delete your footage, which we had happen to us last May in Mississippi, that footage is going to be online, and they can't control that.
Yeah, let's go ahead and explain that to the audience. My wife introduced me to this. She was all over this thing. Got a BlackBerry, and you go and you download the app. It's QIK.com, right?
Correct, absolutely.
So you go to QIK.com, and you just open up an account. You download the app onto your smartphone, and I got a BlackBerry Storm, do the same thing, and you just, while something's happening like this, you just push an icon on your phone, and it just immediately starts recording the video and audio of whatever's going on then. You hit it again, and immediately it transmits it to your web page, and it's posted immediately. So yeah, they can take it all they want. Doesn't make any difference.
Exactly, yeah. They can smash your phone if they like, and the minute they do, they've uploaded the evidence or the video of their wrongdoing to the web, you know, wherever you'd like to push it out through, Facebook, Twitter, your website. I mean, there's many places you can send the information to.
This is, you know, I can't imagine them getting away with certainly anything for any sustained period of time, especially when you know there's some officers in some cities that kind of go overboard, and all you got to do is just go. and they're so accommodating, you know what I mean? They just want to make it clear to everybody, you know, what a butthead they are. But, you know, from their perspective, are they just kind of messed up anyway and they just needed to be caught? Or are they forwarding a policy that is encouraged by their state government or city government? Are they encouraged to do this?
I believe so. I think that I've had so many officers tell me, like, it's the law. And these are things I have to do, and not to mention, I mean, it's what they think the law is, and it's also a lack of training. But they think that they can, whatever they tell you to do, you are supposed to do. And so many people these days are into that motion where it's like, whatever they say, they do. So when they run into somebody, like Pete and myself, who says, wait, hold on, before I give you my ID, how about why? Am I being suspected of a crime? Because if I am and you're investigating me, it's your right not to participate in that investigation. I mean, you don't have to incriminate yourself. You don't have to answer their questions. And so they're just not used to people giving these questions back. They're just used to people giving compliance. They're told to do whatever they have to get compliance. And then they also feel they have the law on their side. There's a lack of accountability with police officers. There's an ego problem with police officers. And all these things in one big pot give us the police state, which we have today, which is only getting worse.
Well, you know, and I would say, too, I don't know if I'd agree that there's every cop has an ego. I mean, I just think it's the institution. Like you mentioned earlier, folks saying, you know, I hate the cops or whatever. And, you know, sure, there's some bad, there's bad cops out there, just like there's bad folks in every profession. But, you know, the difference is they're in a role that they claim this legitimate right to use force, and they have, they don't, they're not held accountable because they investigate themselves. They don't have to respond to market signals, as does every, like most goods and services. So, I mean, that's essentially why we advocate to strike the root, you know, just like change it entirely and have these things, you know, provided on a consensual basis and not, you know, at the barrel of a gun.
When I was young, there was a television program, you may see it on TV Land or something, it was called One Adam 12. You guys ever heard of that?
Yeah.
One Adam 12 was about these two Los Angeles police officers that drove around in a squad car, and you had the mature, learned professional, and you had the rookie, okay? And they go around, and it's always, of course, it's like Dragnet, you know, during those days. It was, you know, from their perspective, and Emergency 51, the paramedic thing, and all this. It was always about, you know, Merv supporting the man. Well, there was one scene I remember as a young man that it was during the, you know, the hippie days and Vietnam protests and all that. And it's, so we're thinking probably around 1970 or something. And they had a training class at the academy to where they had officers just stand there in a gymnasium, like on the basketball court. And they had these young people come up dressed as hippies and so on, going, yeah, and you pig, and you on there, and all yelling at them. Everyone's got their own. There's probably a dozen of them. And they had these guys yelling at them, and they were trying to train them not to react. Well, of course, we know that they did, but they wanted to portray in television that, yes, this is what they had to put up. They're trained not to violate people's rights. They're trained. Now, it's totally different. They're trained to put these punks in their place. Yeah, go on, man. Oh, we expect them to. Do we? Well, there's a whole generation that's challenging that. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Oh, yeah! You gotta have some Doobie Brothers here on Declare Your Independence with my good friends, Pete and Adam from LibertyOnTour.com, which brings the question to mind. You got some young guys out in an RV going around the country with all this freedom stuff all over, Marv, and they got to be thinking, oh, yeah, baby, we know we got us an RV because there's got to be some drugs on there. So you always getting, Marv, getting searched and everything?
Well, actually, the only time we were pulled over was when the RV was not yet painted, and that was last May of 09 in Mississippi. Since then, we kind of think the paint scheme, golden black, ANCAP colors, with 30 graphics on here now, over 30 graphics of different advertisers for Liberty on Tour, that kind of actually helps us, like, acts as a barrier and protects us, you know, gives us a little legitimacy. But even if that's not the case, again, we have a bunch of cameras, and I think we do a pretty decent job standing up for our rights.
I don't know. I credit the two huge Freedom's Phoenix advertisements on here for shunning the cops away from us.
It will have that impact, I am sure. But and we keep working on it. It was our pleasure, you know, because I from the very beginning, I knew I wanted to be associated with you guys because you guys have your own history. You know, think about it. Pete, go ahead and give your history. You got involved in, I guess, real politic and going to Washington and everything. Tell me, just give me a quickie 30-second of your history.
Yeah, I actually was going to school for law enforcement and decided against that. Thought I could have a bigger impact on the outside. I was fortunate to get accepted at Cato as an intern. Did that, worked at the Institute for Humane Studies for a while afterwards, and then worked at Bureaucrash. Left that position because I felt, again, I could have a bigger impact being on the road and kind of doing the online and in-person bridge that Motorhome Diaries was and now Liberty on Tour continues to be. Thank you.
Very cool. Adam, what's your history, man?
Well, you know, like so many people today, I'm a victim of government. I'm a two-time felon for the drug war. So that got me going, lost faith in the justice system, more rights of mine were taken, jobs were eliminated from me, and, you know, all along that just built up, you know, my curiosity to find out, you know, am I crazy or is everyone else nuts? But it turns out that just government's a violent institution. And, you know, also like Pete was active online and through other things, met up with him and Jason last year. And that's when I really kicked my activism up to the next level and haven't looked back since, you know, and now started coplock.org and, you know, doing the Liberty on Tour thing and just trying to help, you know, educate folks. You know,
tell
I don't want everyone to become or believe what I believe, but just to think for yourselves, man. Get out there, read, stay out of that lamestream media, and get out there for yourself and decide what it is you believe and then live that.
The media that's so last century. I can't go any without saying that, man. I mean, these guys, oh, you just want to let them be their own victims. You know, the when you talk about, well, before we get too much further, I want to talk about CopBlock. Go ahead and just give me a quickie on CopBlock and how that developed.
Sure. CopBlock, again, this is Adam. Like I said, I had a personal, my personal life has been littered with police. I was told that, you know, I'm a criminal, a career criminal, and all these things. And you know what? It's my body. It's my choice. And there's never been violence or a victim in any of my crimes, alleged crimes, in my life. So I know I tried to fight back on that by myself. And one person against the man is a tough feat. You know, it's hard to get accountability even if you have 100 people. So I had an idea to create CopBlock, a pro-police accountability website. That also focuses on education. We try to, you know, lead by example. We also are a decentralized organization like Freedom's Phoenix is, and we let people say, hey, you don't have to really criticize us. I mean, give us feedback, but better yet, grab a camera, write a blog, take a picture of a police, partake in these call floods when we call police stations and ask them why they oppress or beat or manipulate people's lives. And, you know, we just really try to get out there and say, hey, the monopoly on force is a problem. The institution of policing we have today is wrong. And privatization and the market and letting people choose how to decide the protection in their life is what we need to get to.
You know, I tell you, I've had a lot of people on the radio over the past 7-8 years, and this is what happens. I'll find someone like you guys that are out there actually freeing minds, movie directors, you know, publishers of books, and they're so excited about sharing what they know with people, and then they'll say, I can't believe the American people is allowing this to happen. I can't believe they're not rising up. I can't believe there isn't anybody else. I go, hey, man, relax. I was waiting on you. and here you come. I got a whole other generation of people doing stuff. You are the solution of me asking that exact same question 15, 20 years ago. So I see it expanding very rapidly. So I want you guys to take heart, man, because and probably you see it more than other people have because you're out on the road going and visiting with people. And I tell you, here it comes. And one thing I wanted to get before the end of the show, it was, I mean, it wasn't a big controversy, a little bit of a dust up in the week building up to 9/11. I'm sure they would refer to me as a truther, you know, as if that was a bad thing. I'm going, how did the word truth become a bad word? I was wondering when that happened, you know, but I'm going, yeah, I just want to know the truth. I mean, you know, let's get the truth. You know, that's good. And I don't dwell on 9/11, you know, always. We'll have guests on it. We'll go, I've done enough. I get it, you know, but the thing is that building up to 9/11 that week before, I heard a cry across the internet from a lot of people, certainly those even in the claim to be in the freedom movement, saying, we don't want to focus on 9/11 because, you know, it's just distract. We don't want to deal with that anymore. It's old. We just, what's your guys' view on it? You know, talking to people and everything. Is that an issue should just go away, or can we at least give it a little bit of attention in a week before, or what? I mean, what's your view on that?
That's a great question, and I like your statement about you being in search of the truth. That's great. When we were in San Diego last week, we joined the Complete Liberty Meetup group. Great group out there, Wes Bertrand, a lot of good folks, and participated in Government Blowback Day. Larry Ludlow made up a pamphlet that essentially said, hey, government intervention abroad, can you blame these people, these victims of U.S. Military imperialism for wanting to fight back? And so we distributed about 250 brochures, had conversations with people. And, you know, there were some military folks walking by, and we got they dropped the F-bomb a couple times, but, you know, a couple of them we brought back and had some conversations. And I,
and gave him some literature. But there were some 9/11 truthers, too, at the other end of the boardwalk. So I went down there and spoke with them. And we actually just put up an interview with one of them, Rob, from the San Diegans for 9/11 Truth. And that's on libertyontour.com. We posted that on Monday. And I think it's a pretty good interview because it shows where the common ground is. At the end of the day, it's government that's the violent institution. And whether they're behind it or complacent or whether there's different, like, groups or families some people believe in behind all this stuff, orchestrating, like, they use the vehicle of government to harm our rights and do all these things. So we just say, again, strike the root and don't grant these people authority. Know that you can run your life better than they can and keep your money and all sorts of things. So, again, if I encourage you to check out that video. We'd be open to hearing some feedback.
And it's called a 9/11. I'm looking at your site now. It's a 9/11 truther and a voluntarist agree. All right, cool. Cool. Government's the problem.
Right on.
So
right
this on. Is, so has it, your interaction with people that you would consider, you know, how do you classify a freedom fighter? I mean, what is it that, because everybody's a freedom fighter. You know, heck, Hitler is for freedom. I mean, you know, everybody's for freedom. But, you know, how do you, what's the litmus test that you put on someone? They go, oh, yeah, I'm a freedom fighter. I'm a libertarian. I'm a whatever. Well, is there a one or two, three questions that you would ask to kind of give you, you know, whether they're telling the truth?
I don't know. For me personally, it's the non-aggression principle. While we were in San Diego, our last night there, we met a man running for Congress who claimed to be a libertarian. And he claimed that why he was a libertarian is because he wanted to get rid of all these government institutions, DHS, the Border Patrol, you know, some of these other agents within the state. But at the end of the day, I asked him, well, once you get rid of all those things, it sounds like there won't be much of anything left federal government-wise. So is the last thing you're going to cut your salary? And he said, no. He said, my family needs to eat. Well, I said, well, you're not a libertarian because your salary is paid for by theft, and that's done by aggression and the initiation of force, so you can't be a libertarian.
Yeah, and this is true. I just add, I mean, the way I look at it, you know, some folks think, like, minarchists, classical liberals, less government folks, they're the same as, going the same direction as, like, anarchists or voluntarists who advocate for no hierarchical government that has a monopoly. They advocate that they're going the same direction, but they just get off a little bit before. But I disagree with that completely. I think they're going in the complete opposite direction because at the end of the day, they allow for some kernel of government to exist. They allow for some, they say these people have a right to control you or deny you choices. So, I mean, there's a joke, you know, what's the difference between a minarchist and an anarchist? And it's, you know, like a couple years of research or study or thought. And that's what I think. And I think it's becoming even less and less with every day that passes, thanks to the internet and thanks to shows like Declaring Independence and other things that are getting folks to think.
Thank. You know, we had a newspaper that we did before Freedom's Phoenix. It was called Western Libertarian Alliance. And we had some libertarians from the 70s. They contacted me and they gave me a good little chunk of money to put two ads inside the paper. And all it said was big giant letters. It said, think. And I go, cool, right on. We should all be thinking. Well, thanks to Pete Iyer and Adam Mueller for helping us to think a little bit. And then when they come in studio, we'll be here next week. We're gonna see if we can dust up a little bit of trouble and try and get along with the man, but still make our points. And maybe they'll help us. Maybe they'll help us on the good side. Then we'll go over to Scottsdale Mesa and get the other side. But, you know, thanks for coming on the air, and you guys stay safe, because I need you here in Phoenix. We got to have some fun, okay?
Right, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
All right, man. LibertyOnTour.com. We'll be right back for a final hour here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.